According to the National Center for Drug Abuse, over 165 million Americans ages 12 and up are currently abusing drugs or alcohol. Of those 165 million Americans, there is a mom, dad, sister, brother, wife, husband, son, daughter, or grandparent praying and pleading that they would stop. Addiction is a subject most people don't like to talk about and is kept behind closed doors. But the Finding Hope podcast will bring light to the subject and give families that are living in shame, guilt, hopelessness, fear, worry, and anger tools and education to find strength, peace, happiness, joy, and hope. Hello, I'm Amy LaRue, Finding Hope Coordinator for Hope is Alive Ministries and your host for this Finding Hope podcast. At Hope is Alive, our mission is to radically change the lives of drug addicts, alcoholics, and those who love them. We do this through our intentional next level sober living homes and faith-based support groups for the loved ones of addicts called Finding Hope.
Thank you for joining us today. On today's episode, I have a very special guest joining us, Ms. Courtney Davis, and she's on staff with us here at Hope is Alive. So welcome, Courtney.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So glad that you get to be a part of this. And so you came to me a while back. It's like, hey, I want to talk to you. And I was listening. It's like, oh my goodness, you are such a valuable asset to our Hope is Alive team.
Thank you.
So I'm so grateful you're here. So tell everybody a little bit about you and what you do for Hope is Alive.
Okay. So my name is Courtney Davis. I am a mom. I've got two little girls. Carson is 10. Eliza is 4.
So you're busy.
I'm very busy. I'm very busy. I really love the brain and science and research. I'm very passionate about it. And I love to serve other people. And I feel like the more that I learn, the more that I can do that.
And so what do you do here at Hope is Alive?
So I am a school support specialist on the school support team. And so we do prevention work where we go into the schools and we work with youth and do prevention.
Okay, so across Oklahoma, you're going in, doing these preventions, getting to talk to students about what the latest trends are and everything going on in the world, and be able to bless these children and be able to advocate for them, but also be real with them.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And a safe place for them.
Right.
And to be there to support them and the teachers and administrators and what's going on in this crazy world, right?
Yeah.
But you mentioned something about the brain, and you love to learn more about the brain and all that. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But let's back up just a little bit before that. So how has addiction impacted you, and why has this become such an why have you become such an advocate about learning more about the brain and all of that?
So addiction has impacted my life greatly. I have family that are in recovery. And so growing up, I was firsthand experiencing the impacts that addiction have.
Yeah.
And so it made me ask the question, why? Why does this happen to people, and why is it out of their control? Because as a child, I just didn't understand, you know, the things that I was experiencing and why, by somebody that loved me or was supposed to love me. Why, you know, why is this drug or why is this substance so much more important? And so I wanted to help other kids that went through what I went through. And so I went to school for psychology.
Okay.
And in school, we had to take psychopharmacology, which is where you learn how medications and substances impact the chemicals in your brain. And I was like, this is fascinating. It has to have something to do with drugs and alcohol too. And so it set me down this path of neuroscience of addiction, and I just became very fascinated. I wanted to know why. I always want to know why.
And I think that's kids, right? Yeah. Even our kids, probably your four-year-old, right? Why, mom? Why? Even your 10-year-old, why do I have to do this? But like, there's something in you, it sounds like, that triggered you as a young child or a teen that's like, okay, why is this impacting our family? Mm. And I don't know if you knew other families. Sometimes we think how we grow up is normal.
Right.
But maybe, I don't know your story of maybe you didn't think it was normal and like you want to figure out why. Is it something I did as a kid maybe, or understanding, or like for me as a wife of an alcoholic, what did I do to make my husband start drinking?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Was it something I did? Is it something I said, something I didn't do? Why? I think we all ask that, right? Especially when we live in this world where we love someone that struggles with substances. And then to the next, not why are they doing it, but why can't they stop?
Yes. Yes. If they love me.
Yes. Why can't they stop? Like, they've lost this. They've lost that. Why are they still going down this path?
Yeah.
I remember my husband, now that he's in recovery, he said, I wanted to stop. I wanted to stop for you. I wanted you to stop for the girls, but I just couldn't. And so he went to treatment, and there was the first time I started to learn that this was a more than just a cold turkey. Go, you can start and stop when you want.
Right.
That they actually talked to us about the brain and how addiction is a disease of the brain.
Right.
And there for a while, I had to keep listening and learning and understanding it. Like, why? Still the questions of why. Is it a choice or is it not? And I know many of our listeners have those same questions. So I'm so grateful you're here. I'm so grateful for all the research you've done. So I'm going to be quiet for a little bit. I'm going to let you just share what you have learned. Is addiction a disease or is it a choice?
So I think that's the thing that I asked myself is, is it a choice? And if it's not a choice, then what's happening? What's happening in your brain? There has to be something deeper to this. And so when I started studying neuroscience, I found Dr. Caroline Leaf, who she is a neuroscientist, and she talks a lot about scripture and how the renewal of your mind and the neurons and I thought that's so fascinating. That has to be connected to, you know, our dopamine and our serotonin. And then I took that psychopharmacology class. And everything just started to connect, and it just set me down this path. And so I just started doing a lot of research, which I learned in college. You do a lot of research and literature reviews. And a lot of people are like, oh, I can't stand that. But I was always fascinated because I still had that question in me of why. And so one thing that I learned is neuroscientists actually find that it's a relapsing brain disorder.
So say that one more time.
Relapsing brain disorder.
Okay.
So not necessarily a disease, but a disorder of your brain that continues. And so there's actually a cycle of addiction. And so that first initial use, someone may choose. And usually someone is using a substance or starts to use it if there's a plethora of reasons. But usually it's to cope with something. So if somebody has anxiety or depression or trauma, they're going to, you know, try a substance and it feels good. And then they want to continue that feeling. But there's something that happens in your brain. And so what happens is your basal ganglia.
Say that. Oh, that's a big word.
It's a fun word. Basal ganglia.
Okay.
It's in the middle part of your brain.
Okay.
And what happens is when you use substances, it activates that part of your brain that produces dopamine, which is the reward. It's the reward chemical in our brain. So when someone is using something, it activates that part of their brain. But then they come down, and then that's the extended amygdala that gets impacted. And that's that withdrawal that people also experience. Yeah. It's that negative effect. And then they go into the cycle where they don't want to feel that way again. They want to get back to that reward feeling. And so it's this cycle that keeps happening and keeps happening in their brain. And so when we look at brain scans and when we look at the research, we can see that someone that get this cycle amplifies over time. And so when someone starts that cycle and they get on it, it's not just getting off of it. There is something that's happening in their brain that it's no longer a choice or control. These are chemicals that are moving in their brain. And over time, it teaches their brain to like stop producing as much dopamine, so they need to use more often to keep even themselves at a normal, I guess, scale or rate for that reward.
So where it might have then started, I'm just going to drink after work, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to have one, and then it turns into two or three.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, now the next day it's like, oh, I need a drink at lunchtime to make it through.
Yeah.
It's building, your body's building almost like a tolerance.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I have to have it. I'm starting to shake, whatever. I have to have it first thing in the morning, at lunch, at my break in the afternoon. And is that kind of what you're saying about that?
Yeah. And it also, so it starts to affect your prefrontal cortex, which is the front part of your brain that is for logical thinking, decision making. You know, someone that you see that is, you know, in their addiction and they're making all these choices and you're like, why are they doing that? Well, that prefrontal cortex is hijacked. They are not thinking logically. They're incapable of it because once they get stuck in that cycle and it starts impacting their prefrontal cortex, that's why it's not a choice anymore. They're making these decisions and these choices because this part of their brain is hijacked. And so that impulsivity, to use that impulsivity to, you know, make decisions they wouldn't normally make. That's why.
Because I get those phone calls and I talk to people all the time. Yeah. This isn't who my kid is. This isn't who my husband or my wife is. And I'm said, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Right? They're two different people. When that brain gets hijacked, is that the word you used?
Yeah.
And I was like, you have to separate them to them in their addiction, to them by their name. So it'd be like Shane, my husband, Shane, right? To when he's in his addiction. And they're two different people in the same body.
Yeah. And it doesn't, I know as someone that has family or has had family in addiction and still do, it's the shaming and all of that and their love for you. It's not that they don't love you or that you're not enough or your love isn't enough. Their brain is doing something that they can't control anymore. Mm-hmm. And so like we are tempted to shame them because of what we're feeling, because of what we're experiencing from them. They are doing that. It is happening to us. But a lot of times we go into that shaming them and it really does nothing. So I really like what you said about separating the two people, because somebody that is an addiction is no longer that person that they were. They're just not. And that's why this topic is important to me, because I wanted to understand why, you know, and I think it's important that we have these conversations, because for me, because I can only speak for myself, it comforted me as much as it could.
Yeah.
To understand that it wasn't just that I wasn't loved, uncared for, unworthy. It had nothing to do with that there was something that had taken place beyond their control at that point, you know? And so I think the more we have these conversations, we actually help people recover more.
So how do they get out of that cycle?
Right. So getting out of the cycle. So that goes back to like why they started using in the first place. So mental health use disorders and substance use disorder typically co-occur, which means someone that has anxiety or depression might use substances to cope and then get on that cycle of addiction, or someone that's in addiction because they're messing with the chemicals in their brain can develop anxiety, depression. And so either or are this...
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle either way. And so how we get somebody out of addiction, one, it has to be their choices, as we all know, but something needs to happen to break up that cycle. So unfortunately for a lot of people, they hit rock bottom. They lose their family, their home, you know.
And it looks different for every person.
And it does look different for every person, because not everybody needs to hit rock bottom to get sober. But a lot of it is addressing what started the addiction in the first place. And so for a lot of people, I'm not sure have you heard of ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences? So that's something else I'm really passionate about, because I was interested, because research says that if you have four or more or higher on the ACE scale, that you're more likely to develop substance use disorder or mental health use disorder. And I was looking at...
So we step back just a second. Yeah, we explain to because I was in the teaching. I used to be a teacher educator, so I understand that. Where some people listening might be like, what's this ACEs? Like, how do you get this score? What does that mean? What questions is on it?
Yeah. So the ACE score is Adverse Childhood Experiences. It's a scale. Mm-hmm. And so there's a questionnaire and anybody can access it. It's a free quiz that you can do online. They have one for youth and one for adults. And so basically you answer a list of questions, depending on which one, 12 to 14 questions. And it can be used, I think a lot of therapists use it. It can be, teachers can use it. I've used it. It can be used to gauge how to support somebody that has had these experiences.
Like, what's one experience it might ask about?
So it will ask, have you experienced violence in your home, either to you, or have you witnessed parental violence in your home? Was there substance use in your home? Was there any sexual abuse? Things like that.
Okay.
So those are the adverse experiences that might set
and some people might call
up.
The trauma.
In yes.
A, right.
In a nutshell, yeah, because I could go on forever. In a nutshell, we all have things that we experience that cause us to cope with life. So you have somebody that has experienced trauma, and it could be a big trauma, like violence or, you know, sexual abuse, but it could also be something very little, like you were bullied. And so all of us have these, you know, adverse childhood experiences, whether you have 10 or 4, we all have some sort of negative experience. And then we grow up, and then we get introduced, whether in high school and you're experimenting or just a friend or however you get introduced to substances, you try it. It activates that reward system in your brain, and then you're no longer thinking, or you're no longer in that state of depression or anxious. Like, for a moment, you feel better. And so that's what kind of can start that cycle. But the way that we can heal that cycle is by getting to the root of why someone started, which is why I brought up the ACEs, is what did they experience? And I think it's important to note, too, I have heard a lot of times people say, well, they had a great childhood. And that bothers me a little, because while on the outside, someone may have a degree, someone may be a football player, someone may have a life on the outside to you, to the normal eye, that, well, they had a great life. How? Why did they, you know, become an addict? Well, an injury. Bam, you know, you can fall into addiction, you know, any experience like that, someone can fall into it. And it's because addiction doesn't discriminate.
Well, like you said, on the outside.
Yeah.
Right.
On the outside.
It's, and we've talked about that as on here, even the masking, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Is, you know, we're really good at masking all the time.
Yeah.
And, even social media sometimes makes it look like, oh, look at these, all this wonderful stuff this family's doing. Why?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's so good. So I have another question.
Yeah.
So why do some people, like my husband, he struggles, right, with substances. He has to be careful. Like, he's in recovery. But for me, I can pick up a glass of wine if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And not even drink the whole thing and stop, right? Yeah. Why are some of our brains, some people's brains have that cycle and then some do not?
So that's another really interesting thing. So there is something that we have written in our DNA called epigenetics. Epigenetics.
Okay.
So there's genetics and epigenetics.
Okay.
But your epigenetics, you can think of it like an instruction manual.
Okay.
So things that are passed down from your parents are written into your epigenetic, your code, your DNA. And so, like, depression, anxiety, addiction, all of those things are like ruts written into your epigenetics. Your life experiences and what you experience in life can either turn those on and activate them, or keep them turned off. So if you have a parent that has depression and you go through life, and you might be more susceptible to developing it, right? And same with addiction.
Okay.
So neuroscientists actually found that 40 to 70% of addiction is genetic. And the reason why is they found two different genetic codes. So I hope I'm getting this right, but it's DRD2, which is the way that your body metabolizes alcohol. And then there's another gene, and it's the way that your body uses and stores dopamine. So when you talk about what you were saying, I'm the same way. How do I know so many people in addiction? How is that running through my family and not me? How am I able to have control over something and they're not? Well, we don't always know who does or doesn't have the mm-hmm. genes, but we can look at my family and see I clearly do. And then why didn't I? So to answer your question is, I mean, I know that it's in my genetic code, but it never got activated for okay. me. There are actually genes that for me, something that might affect someone else in my family a certain way and feel good doesn't feel good for me. That dopamine, it doesn't mm-hmm. produce the same amount of dopamine. So I could use something that they used and be like, that's not that
yeah.
great, you know, and just like you can, you know, have a glass of wine or something like that, and it doesn't make you just want to keep going. That's because your body metabolizes it different, and that reward signal that it's sending is just different for you. And I think that's really interesting.
So something else, we haven't even talked about this, that yeah. maybe you might not even have an answer. Maybe it's just your personal opinion.
Yeah.
So you said activated, right? Mm-hmm. So my husband, he didn't struggle with substances until his 30s. Mm. And so it almost sounds like he would used to be able to have, you know, a drink or, you know, we didn't drink really, but like he would be able to stop, right? Just like I could.
Right.
But then something when he, in his 30s, switched. Mm. And I know somebody else on staff, that same thing has happened. It wasn't until their 30s or later on in life that something, so it's almost like a switch
yeah.
got activated. Yes. That's the word you used, right? Yes. And we don't know why it happened then. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
This would definitely just be opinion. But my opinion would be that it was probably in there somewhere mm-hmm. in the epigenetics. And so even though it didn't happen like right out of high school and mm-hmm. in his 20s, it, not saying it was bound to happen because that's not the way that I see it, but it was written in there. And so that's the only way that I can answer him being in his 30s, why he just now started to experience that. And then also your use over time, you can start using something and be able to control it. And you could control it for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And then all of a sudden you just, something changes and then you're
off to the races. I've heard that saying.
Yeah, you're off to the races because you're still, even if you're not in addiction, everybody's brain and body goes through that cycle of the basal ganglia activation, the reward. Mm-hmm. And so maybe something subconsciously for him, like something in his brain remembered that reward and maybe experiences. I mean, this is just
yeah.
opinion, but I mean, I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen too. Like I have friends and know people that were like the people that were like, never drank at the high mm-hmm. school parties, never did anything. And then 36.
I mean, that was us.
yeah. Yeah. And, but they, you know, and they didn't. And then boom, you know, yeah. they're in their 40s and in a full blown addiction. And so I guess my opinion would be that your brain remembers things. I mean, not everything is in your conscious. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of chemical things, you know, neurological things that are going on. But I think it's important, you know, God designed our brains to be neuroplastic or neuroplasticity where they can heal. Mm. And so people can recover. It's just healing whatever happened in them to start the addiction in the first place. They need to realize that. Mm-hmm. They need to find out why. They need to, because that's gonna
get down to the root of it.
You got to get to the root wherever that seed was planted. Yeah.
Lots of good information.
Yeah, thank you.
What, anything else you want to share
that
you're passionate about or that you think would be important to those that love someone that struggle? I mean, any about like relapse or how, you know, all of that, like we haven't really talked about relapse here lately. You know, again, that's part of that cycle within the brain.
Yeah. Relapse is, it goes along with addiction. Mm-hmm. And I know it can be really painful when you have a family mm-hmm. member that's been doing so good and they relapse. And I know that there's a lot of different opinions about relapse out there. Like, oh, if you're truly in recovery, you wouldn't relapse. I mean, that's not necessarily always mm-hmm. true. Mm-hmm. Because relapse is actually a part of that cycle of addiction. You know, their brain's always going to want that reward again. Mm-hmm. And it takes 18, I mean, this depends on, I don't know exactly how long, depending on how long you've been using something, it can take 18 plus months just for the chemicals in your brain to go back to normal. And just imagine if someone's been using for 20 years, how long it's going to take.
Well, I mean, they mentioned that at my husband's treatment when yeah. we went down for family weekend. And I was like, it's going to take, you know, it was just that because I yeah. didn't know anything.
Right.
And so if you're listening for the first time and you don't understand yeah. this, it's okay. Like, that's what we're here for. We're yeah. here to support you. I'm still learning. I'm yeah. learning from Courtney today, you yeah. know, and research. They're still doing research constantly in the best reason. You know, we're going to be. In 5 years from now, maybe 3 years, might have a different conversation for what they're learning through yeah. these brain scans, which is so phenomenal what they can do now with yeah. that and learning and yeah. all of that. And that's where it goes back to what we talk about all the time, having those boundaries.
Yeah.
And I was yeah. talking to a mom yesterday on the phone and I said, trying to separate like we talked about. Mm. And I was like, you're not detaching from them. Yeah. You're detaching from the chaos. Mm. What you're saying, they can't make those decisions, those rational decisions that we just want to shake them at, right? Yeah. Like, hello, do you not see it? No, yeah. you just told us their brain isn't allowing them to,
yeah.
right?
That's
but we can detach from that. Yeah. So use the word rock bottom. I like to also use the word so they can get to a place of desperation,
yes.
right?
Yeah,
they have cool. to get to that place of desperation mm. to then get to that root problem and all yeah. of that.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what it is at some point they get sick of that. And even when they're in that addiction, they're sick of it.
They are. They even yeah. tell them, I mean, there's a video I've watched, like, this is my last time, I'm going to stop. And then something which part of your brain says, no, you need this, that, you know, like to survive. Yeah. And
your extended amygdala and everything yeah. starts withdrawing, and it's that impulsivity and that impulse control. Everything just keeps doing this. And so even though consciously, they know that they want to stop because they're conscious of,
like my husband, he wanted to.
Yeah. But they literally cannot. Their brain is doing something and needing something. And it's not just something they control with a thought. It's just healing, ultimately.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, anything else you want to share before we go today?
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. But I like to leave our listeners with a challenge. And so as you've been talking, I've been trying to think through what is a challenge. And so what is that what was that gene you're talking about? The lineage?
The epigenetics.
Epigenetics. Yeah. So I did something and I want to challenge everybody. The epigenetics is to look at your family tree. Mm. And to look, like, I'm able to look at my family tree. And on one side of my family, there's not much addiction. Right. But there might be more on another side. And so, and you know, grandparents and great grandparents, they didn't talk about it.
Sure.
But you still can look at it. And so I was just challenged just to take a minute to sit back and look at that. Like, where could this, which line could this be coming from? And just to look at it and be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like it's, and I look at it with my kids, I'm sure, you know, it's like, okay, like all three of them or none of them or two of them or one of them,
yes.
right? And so just like what you're doing in the schools, we have to be real with them and be transparent with them at their level and, you know, have these open conversations, which, you know, I think nowadays it's getting easier to have these open conversations too.
Yeah.
So that's my first challenge. And then my second one is, if you still don't understand or you're still on the line, like, but it's a choice. Yes, I agree. Like, it was that first choice. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it wasn't even their choice. They had a surgery and the doctor prescribed that medicine.
Yeah.
You know? And so I would just encourage you to do your own research. Yeah. Go look for more videos. Reach out to me. Reach out to Courtney. And we can definitely get you more research behind this, send you some videos, some papers, and all of that. So I would just encourage you to do your own research on this as well.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for joining us this week. And you can learn more about Finding Hope at findinghope.today. But before you go, I would love for you to give us a 5-star review and share this on social media and subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss our next hope-filled episode. Thanks again for joining me, Amy LaRue, and our special guest, Courtney Davis, on this episode of Finding Hope. And remember, you are not alone. It's not your fault. There is hope.